Hello and welcome to the Rewind Replays podcast. This is a podcast that my friend Hayden here, initially was going to do, but instead gave over to me to take over, which I'm not complaining. Really, all we're going to be doing is talking about movies that have either been out for years, such as like The Evil Dead, we did an episode, or basically anything post theatrical release, so anything that's on DVD right now. And today's episode, we will be talking about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory from 1971. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I don't know what year that movie came out.
2005.
Okay. And Goodfellas.
1990.
Okay. So basically, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Willy Wonka. Everyone knows at least one of those two films. One of them's a classic, one of them's an unnecessary remake. And then Goodfellas, just a great classic horror film. Mafia mob film.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and jump right into it. So the first one we're going to be talking about is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So basically, the main thing of this movie is it focuses on a boy named Charlie and his impoverished family, I guess is how you put it. Basically, Mr. Wonka announces a golden ticket contest kind of thing, where you would you would open candy bars, and if you get lucky, you'll find a golden ticket to go tour his factory. I believe it's three tries Charlie does to find the golden ticket, and on the third try, he finally gets it, and successfully gets that golden ticket. He takes it home. Grandpa Joe symbolically gets out of bed and joyfully takes Charlie to the factory on the next day after he finds it. Gene Wilder is Mr. Willy Wonka in this movie. Plays it great. They go throughout the factory, and if you haven't seen it before, spoilers, but basically any kid that goes through the tour gets, how would you put it?
I would basically say they get harassed to the extent of where, like, Mr. Wonka is playing mind games with them, and then after that they eventually go to their pratfall, or pitfall, as you would put it, because one kid is obsessed with eating everything, and one girl is obsessed with chewing gum. One girl wants everything because she's spoiled rich, and then the other kid thinks that, like, Mr. Wonka has invented the coolest thing on the planet, and he doesn't understand why he doesn't want to give it to
Mike
the world.
Mike TV.
Yeah. And basically, every one of those kids gets their comeuppance, and they learn a lesson in the end and stuff, but it's only Charlie at the end that survives the entire horrible events.
But, when he is supposed to win his prize, Mr. Wonka, basically yells at him and Grandpa Joe because they drank the fizzy soda and floated up into the sky and touched stuff they're not supposed to touch, and he's like, oh, now I have to have that cleaned, sterilized. So, yeah, Charlie's all upset about that, which, I guess, understandably, gives him the everlasting gobstopper back and actually does end up winning. They get on the glass elevator, break through the glass ceiling, and that's pretty much how the movie ends, isn't it? So, do you want to go ahead and start talking about this a little bit?
Yeah. So, I guess for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, this was a movie that I had seen when I was very little, and I have not revisited it since. After rewatching this movie, I will say I do like the charm that it has and stuff. Gene Wilder is a great Willy Wonka. I like with the message behind the film and stuff. And it's a Roald Dahl book, obviously, so there's going to be some messed up stuff in it. Like, all the kids get basically mangled in horrible ways and bad stuff happens to them. But they're kind of learning a lesson on how they can be better persons and not actually be the same way they are throughout the rest of life. And I think that the best thing about this movie is the fact that it kind of stays true to heart to what it is. It's a movie that's about wanting more, but realizing that you can't be spoiled rotten and just expect everything to go your way, because Charlie Bucket goes through a lot of, like, things in this movie where his family is so poor they can barely afford enough to eat, and he's thankful that his family is able to still provide at least, like, the cabbage soup and stuff that they eat, and he works as, like, a paperboy and stuff to make some money so he can provide for the family, because all of his grandparents are bedridden and stuff. And the reason that you really like this kid is because no matter how many times basically this kid gets, like, bad things happen to him and stuff, or a kid wins the final golden ticket and stuff, he still kind of has a somewhat positive mindset, like, yeah, oh, maybe things will get better and stuff. And that's why you really like Charlie. The other kids you don't really care so much about because they're all spoiled, rotten, and terrible in their own ways. But for the most part, I would say that I really kind of enjoyed this film.
Yeah. So I real quick did want to say, so let's go through kind of what the punishments for the kids are.
Okay.
There's the first one is when they go into the world of pure imagination.
Yeah.
Augustus Gloop, he's drinking from the chocolate river, and Wonka's like, no, don't do that. You're going to contaminate the chocolate. And I guess, yeah, basically. He falls in and gets sucked up the tube, blocks it, and then gets sucked all the way through. The next one is not Veruca Salt, it's Violet.
Mm-hmm.
Violet Beauregard. She's the girl that's obsessed with chewing bubblegum. She tries the bubblegum that's a meal?
Yeah, it's a three-course meal.
Or something like that. Yeah, it's a three-course meal. And Wonka's basically, the whole time she's doing it, he's like, oh no, don't, stop. He's basically just kind of being a dick to her because he told her. She expands into a massive blueberry child, basically. And then there's Veruca Salt, who, she's just a spoiled rotten kid who wants one of those golden eggs from the geese, and she does a whole musical number. She's like, oh, I want it now, Dad. And her dad wants to give her everything because he's some fat English man. And then, who's next? Mike TV. Basically Wonka invents this,
it's a teleporter.
It's borderline a teleporter, yeah. Which makes things that are big smaller through the TV, and you can reach in and grab it. And Mike TV's like, oh, wow, I want to do that. And he does, and he's a tiny little kid. Like, really small. After that, Charlie's the only one left, and as we said in the kind of synopsis of the movie, he learns his lesson and everything. Yeah, I really love this movie. I've seen it before. It's probably in my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know why. I think it's just because of the somewhat symbolicism and the somewhat, like, childlike nature of it. Gene Wilder is a great Willy Wonka in this movie.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory next, and you'll understand why I do not like Johnny Depp at all. Gene Wilder, he plays him perfectly. He says those random kind of symbolic lines to everyone when they say something stupid, which is kind of funny. There's the infamous Wondrous Boat Ride scene.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone loves that scene.
Yeah, that's a great scene.
Because he tells that wonderful poem, around the world and home again, that's the sailor's way, which says hell in it.
Yeah.
And I guess that was kind of edgy back in the day. One thing I really love about that scene is all the lights. It gives, like, different angles on his face from one shot in front of him. And it's just because of the light on his face. And I think that makes it look really beautiful.
Yeah.
Because you don't really see that in movies nowadays. Because it's supposed to look creepy. Because it's supposed to scare you. Like, they have the scenes with the centipedes crawling on people, and then there's the chicken getting its head cut off. This is a kid's movie, and they're showing that kind of stuff, and I love it. It just shows how people knew kids would, like, understand this stuff, and nowadays you don't get quite that. I really do love this movie. I'm glad I got to watch it again. Anything you want to add?
This is an interesting movie for me because while I do appreciate the nice message it has behind it about family and stuff, and I like the way that it kind of talks about how if you're good, life will treat you well and stuff, and I like the message kind of behind that and how this movie is just kind of simple for kids because it's not like the biggest overarching plot and stuff. Gene Wilder is a charm in pretty much every role that he plays. In this movie, he's very good at playing kind of like the narcissistic Willy Wonka that's kind of like, oh no, these kids are getting into horrible situations, what can I do? And I like the way that he's constantly, like, telling the parents, well, this is your fault, you made your kid this way, I can't do anything about his actions and stuff.
It's pretty much the Seven Deadly Sins minus two.
I think what I kind of like about Willy Wonka in this movie is the fact that he's just kind of like, I don't really care what these other kids do. I'm trying to teach Charlie, you know, the fundamentals of candy and all that, because he goes through all the machines and stuff, and all the kids are like, oh, I could care less.
Yeah,
and stuff.
He pretty much knew Charlie was going to win this one.
Yeah. But his biggest test comes at the ending, of course, after all the kids are eliminated, and he's sitting in that room and stuff, and he's like, oh, you guys drank the fizzy lifting drinks, and now the ceiling has to be sterilized. You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir. And
you
so,
lose.
You know.
Good day, sir!
And of course, that leads to Charlie kind of feeling bad about it and stuff, and so he's like, well, here you go. Take my everlasting gobstopper back. I thought you were a great guy and stuff and all that. And he walks out, and then Mr. Wonka finally realizes that there is good in these kids and stuff. It just took the right one to finally do it.
Yeah.
He gets all happy and stuff. He says that he passed the test and all that. Because I imagine if any of the other kids somehow got through...
They would not have passed that test.
Yeah. Not at all.
I guess the only one that I can see, maybe, is Augustus Gloop. Because he actually loves candy.
Yeah, he loves candy, but...
The dude's a glutton.
To an extent where he just continuously eats and he doesn't stop.
Yeah, pretty much.
The one thing that I will say about this movie that's quite interesting is when we get into, like, the musical aspect of it...
Oh, God, it's wonderful.
The songs are pretty good, especially, like, the first one that starts off, the Candyman song. That's a really good song.
Yeah,
I
think it's a great way to get you drawn into the movie.
It brings you into this childlike wonderland and stuff. I like the song Gene Wilder sings about pure imagination. I think it's a nice nod and stuff to what he could do as a singer and stuff. Huh. The Oompa Loompa songs are kind of hit or miss for me. For the most part... I thought that, like, the first one with Augustus Gloop, okay, that's nice and stuff, but then when you get to, like, Violet and Veruca and Mike TV and they all still do the Oompa Loompa doopity-doo thing, you're just kind of like, oh, you're not going to change it up or do anything kind of different. I was just kind of like, well, these songs are, yeah, I'm not going to remember them for the most part.
It's better than Charlie and the Chocolate Factories, though.
I don't know, because what I'll say about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory when we get to the music with that is there is an essence of, like, it's catchy because of Danny Elfman being behind the soundtrack and stuff.
What music there is, because they don't do the kids' songs, they don't do Pure Imagination, they don't even do Candyman.
No. And I will say this, the book doesn't really say anything about, like, Pure Imagination or Candyman or anything like that. Like, the only songs that are in the book are the ones the Oompa Loompas sing for the kids' comeuppance. So maybe that's what Tim Burton was going for and stuff. But
I guess
the songs in the old one are just kind of for me. I think that, like, the first one with Augustus is charming and stuff, but when they repeat it through the other three kids, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. I'm just kind of, like, checked out on this music and stuff. And for the most part, I like the other childlike whimsy stuff that they have in this movie. Like, they go into a big room and it's filled with all of these geese that are laying golden eggs, and Veruca of course is like, oh, I need one of these, this is such a cool thing. They go on that Wash-O-Matic Wonka thing where they they all get covered in soap and stuff, and then they go through that machine and they're all magically clean. It's just like, it's wonderful little moments like that that just kind of have me going, all right, this movie is kind of like a charming little film.
This see, so you like the rest of the songs. You don't like the Oompa Loompa songs.
No, the Oompa Loompa songs are not for me.
So I can understand that because they are very repetitive. But I guess it's kind of the point. But I'm not quite sure how to put that. We must say the Oompa Loompas in this one are 10 times better than the ones in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, in my opinion.
The ones in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory are played by some sort of midget. I don't remember the name.
It's just some guy that they downscaled. They had him, like, go in front of a green screen and do all this stuff, and then they just downscaled him.
And it's just, like, a bunch of versions of him and stuff. Like, they talk in higher or lower pitch voices. And it's, like, it's funny and stuff, but what I appreciate about, like, Charlie and, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is the fact that it's kind of, like, it hired all of these, like, midget actors and stuff to play
little
the Loompas. They painted their faces orange and stuff. They were just going around being pretty much all goofy and stuff, and that's what I kind of appreciated about it.
I might say, surprisingly, the most, surprising thing to me was they didn't call them midgets in this movie. They called them little people.
Yeah, little people.
Which is very PC for that day and age, because that's back when they would have called them midgets. I think that just surprised me.
I don't know.
So the Oompa Loompas in this one are probably a lot better, in my opinion. And they're compared to the book, they're not the same at all. Because the book, they were just slaves. They were just black people. They were just black slaves, which, I mean, sure thing, Roald Dahl. But I think this movie really improved on it, because at least he made them orange people with green hair who seemed to like their jobs. They showed the creation of some of the candies.
Yeah.
I mean, the opening freaking scene them is the candy machines making the candies, which is like little wafers with the chocolate going over top.
And then you get to see them go to the Everlasting Gobstopper machine, and they're just kind of playing around on that. And the movie's very, very fun at like showing off how the candy is made and how the kids' reactions are and stuff. Because like the Everlasting Gobstopper machine, the only reason that the kids really care about that is because Slugworth in this movie is constantly like telling the kids, "You bring this for me, you're gonna get a big sum of money and stuff."
You don't hear him say anything out loud aside from the slight whispering until he gets to Charlie, because I guess the movie's basically in Charlie's point of view the whole time, because he's the main character.
Yeah.
Even though it's called Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory. So yeah, you see Mr. Slugworth, who his voice doesn't really match up with his look. You'd expect him to have like kind of a what's his name? Christopher Lloyd from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. You'd expect him to have kind of a voice like that or something. But no, it's very kind of like a higher kind of German or Russian almost voice. Yeah. Which I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just you don't expect it.
No, you don't expect it. But the thing about it is, what I like about Slugworth, even though he's not in the remake, is I like this character kind of because he's like the guy that's supposed to be playing a character to see what kids are actually rotten and what kids will actually like not betray Mr. Wonka.
Yeah. Well, he is kind of in the remake, but not in the way you'd think. He's just a reference.
Yeah. This movie is very good at kind of showing the duality of a good and bad kid, basically, because Charlie, like, he offers him, like, $500, which would be killer for his family if he got that money and stuff. And he turns it down, and it's just like, here, take the Gobstopper back. I'm never going to give it to Slugworth and all that. And that's what finally proves to Wonka that he's a kid that will not give up.
Yeah, he's like, Charlie, you've done it. He's like, oh, finally, a good kid. And then he has Mr. Slugworth come out, and he's like, that's Mr. Slugworth, and Willy Wonka's like, no, he works for me, and Charlie finally gets it. He's like, I don't really have much else to say about anything else except for
the glass elevator,
I guess. But also I wanted to mention the unnecessary musical sequence with Charlie's mom, because she's at work, she's like a clothes washer, basically. Charlie comes up, talks to her a little bit, he's like, hey mom, I got off school and I delivered all my papers and I wanted to come see you real quick, see if you needed me to walk you home. She's like, oh no, I'm gonna be staying out a little bit later, Charlie, because I gotta do some extra work. And then as he's like running away, she just stops working, comes outside, sits down and just sings to nothing but a Charlie that's running away. It's probably the most unnecessary musical sequence in the movie.
I can see why it's unnecessary to some people. Yeah. To me, it's just kind of like symbolic of the fact that like Charlie's down on his luck because this fifth golden ticket has been found by some kid, and he thinks that his whole world is kind of shut down because he feels like his opportunity has slipped, and he's crying and stuff, and he just feels horrible about the fact that he let this opportunity go by. He doesn't understand why the world treats him like this, why he doesn't get like his sort of comeuppance and stuff, why he doesn't get his special golden prize and stuff, why all these other kids do. And I think it's a great moment because the song there is like his mom trying to comfort him and stuff without like actually having a scene of comfort. She's singing it to him and stuff, because most musical movies like this would kind of have that, where they just break out into song, kind of explaining the emotion that they're trying to share versus just sitting down and having it, which I think is nice. But I guess to kind of get into the ending with the glass elevator, I think that scene's nice. I mean, granted, I think Gene Wilder is just the charm there in that scene, because he's like, I've never pushed that button before. I don't know what's going to happen here.
He's like, this elevator can go up, down, sideways, slantways, and forward and backwards. And he's like, oh, wow. Charlie's like, oh, wow. He's like, and there's one button I haven't pushed, Charlie. And he's like, oh. He's like, and I want you to push it. And Charlie presses. It's not really a glass elevator. It's more like a golden elevator with glass walls.
It's like a rocket ship that comes out almost.
Kind of.
And then when they finally get up in the air and stuff, Mr. Wonka like is going to take him back home and stuff. And he's like, oh, Charlie, I can't believe it. You're going to finally get the factory and stuff. And then he teaches him that last lesson. He's like, don't forget about the boy who got everything. And he's like, what happened? He's like, he lived happily ever after. And the movie just ends on them in the big glass elevator rotating. And that's it.
Yeah. I really like that. And I will mention one thing. Special effects in this movie aren't the greatest, but what do you expect from 1971?
Yeah.
Like, that's when they first started to get into, like, actual, like, editing and putting backgrounds and stuff, so it's not the best, but it looks fine.
Yeah.
Like, the scene where they're up in the air because of the fizzy soda drink, you can see the wires.
Yeah, a little
bit. On them, but it's not horribly noticeable. I can say one thing. This movie probably wasn't meant to be watched in a high resolution. I think it was definitely meant to be watched in, like, a lower resolution because, like, the scene with the mic TV where it gets smaller, or with the chocolate bar and it gets smaller and put in the TV, you can see the stand that it's on, and you're not supposed to be able to see that. So I think it's definitely, like, you're not supposed to watch it in a higher resolution, like 1080p or something.
Oh, okay. So I guess I don't really have anything more to say about this movie. Like I said, this is a fine movie for me. I like it, I think it's great, and all the stuff that it has is just a simple children's movie. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is a movie that, it's probably not in my top 10 or anything, but for the most part, this is just a movie that I can kind of appreciate and stuff, and if I ever wanted to rewatch it again, I'd probably pick this a little bit more over the remake, because it's got some nicer stuff in it. I guess now, yeah, we can move into the remake.
Do you want to do ratings real quick?
At the end.
Okay. So, the remake. Basically the same plot.
Yeah, it's the same plot.
there's a few different things, but it's not too major. We'll probably get into it as we talk about it.
Yeah,
one thing I will say about the remake, there's definitely a lot more backstory.
Yeah.
Which everyone asks for when they watch a movie.
I don't know. This was kind of a strange remake, because when Roald Dahl said a couple years back that he hated Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I don't know why Warner Brothers took that to heart as like, well, we must do a remake then, because he didn't like it. And so
he didn't want to see another one in his lifetime. So they were like, well, he's dead now.
And so I think what Warner Brothers kind of did was they just called up Tim Burton. They were like, hey, you've made some films in the past. You might as well just try and, like, do something with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. He's like, okay, I'll put my dark spin on it. And he made this movie, and there's a lot of mixed bag here for me. First off, I guess we'll address the elephant in the room. Johnny Depp is Willy Wonka.
The pedophile.
Basically, what I describe him as, like, Michael Jackson mixed with, like, a pedophile mixed with, like, a complete serial killer almost.
So Michael Jackson mixed with the pedophile, so Michael Jackson.
Well, those allegations are kind of shaky right
okay,
now.
Okay, so basically, it's Michael Jackson if he made candy. And, I guess I was going to say if he kept his childhood, but he kind of did keep his childhood, Michael Jackson did. Mm-hmm. So, Johnny Depp's character, he's just weird.
Yeah.
He was that one kid that never had a childhood, so he's trying to live it through his adult life.
So basically the reason that he's kind of insane and all that is that in his youth, he was never allowed to have candy because his dad would burn it on Halloween and would be like, candy can get stuck in your retainer and all that, and it'll be wasteful for you to use candy because it's bad for you. And then he ends up going out and doing bad stuff like trying candy and all that, and his dad catches him and he's like,
writing it down in his notebook. Yeah. He's like, oh, this one tastes really good.
And his dad is like, no, son of mine will be a chocolate tear, and he's like, well, I'll run away then, Dad, and he runs away.
There is a pretty comedic sequence where he's like, you can see Charlie walking, there's all those flags, like, digitally edited in later, and then he gets to the end of the hall, and the guy's like, oh, it's time to go home, it's closed, and it turns out he was walking through the Hall of Flags.
Yeah.
Do you real quick want to talk about who Charlie's dad is in the movie, Willy Wonka's dad is in the movie?
Yes, so Christopher Lee has a very minor role in this movie. He's just pretty much
Wilbur Wonka DDS.
Yeah, he's just a dentist, and he's like the sole motivation for why this Wonka is a bit insane and stuff. And really, I can understand why the movie wanted to put him in here, but just the execution is not that great.
Yes.
It feels like it's a bit tacked on and stuff, like they just wanted to flesh out Willy Wonka a little bit more. But it's like Han Solo. Why do you need a separate movie to show off this guy's background?
Yeah.
The one thing that you like about Han Solo is the fact that, like, he's a character shrouded in mystery. He's just a cool guy. He's a smuggler. He goes around and does stuff for the Empire and all that. Not the Empire, my bad. For the Rebellion and stuff. And he's just a cool smuggler. You don't want to know his backstory, but instead they made a movie about it. And then this movie is like, oh, you know what? Willy Wonka, you don't really care about him and stuff, but we're going to give you a backstory anyways.
So, you want to know a fun fact about Christopher Lee?
What?
He was originally supposed to be Dr. Loomis in the original Halloween movie.
Was he?
Yeah, John Carpenter wanted to get him, but I guess Christopher Lee was famous enough at that time to be able to turn it down. And he said later in his life that he regrets it, because Halloween was such a kind of a hit.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, back to Charlie and Chocolate Factory. The first, like, 40 minutes are kind of uneventful, because it's pretty much the original movie in a way.
Well, I'd say it's kind of interesting because there are some things in it that are changed up that are kind of like more it shows you what the world was like and stuff, because they don't, in the original, they kind of go, well, Willy Wonka closed his factory because people were stealing candies and stuff, and so this movie is very good at, like, showing all those other businesses and how they opened up and got these ideas and stuff, and they even have that scene where the guy walks out of the factory and hands the guy at the end of the alley the recipe.
That big nose, like, English-looking guy.
Yeah, and they all use it to make these candies and stuff, and so Wonka has that moment where he's like, well, I can't trust any of my workers, so he closes his gates forever, and we kind of see that. In the original, you don't really understand why he closed it, because you never see the events that precede and all that, and even when you think about it, you're just like, okay, so some people stole some candy recipes, how bad could it get? And this movie shows to an extent how bad it could get.
So I think they don't even really allude in the original to why he closed it. I think it's just supposed to be like either he just went into hiding, or maybe he went into like a depression or something.
Yeah, it was kind of just like he stopped making candy. So I will give the movie points for that.
No, he still made candy. He just never came outside.
I know.
Oh, another thing we should mention, in the original movie, Charlie didn't have an apparent dad.
Yeah.
His dad was never there, and in this one, he actually has an apparent dad who works.
Yeah, I don't know if whether that's to add context to the fact that, like, because it's just like Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory was like, yeah, Charlie possibly had a dad, but he ran away or died. They never
basically a deadbeat is what they think.
They don't really hint at the fact of what happened to him. In this one, they're like, oh no, he's a hardworking guy and stuff, and he has a very minor role. He brings home toothpaste caps and stuff so that Charlie can build his little life-size replica, or little replica, I guess.
Yeah. And I think at the end they kind of make it seem like how Willy Wonka kind of appreciates something like that.
Yeah.
Because Charlie has that childhood wonderment, is the word I would say. So, I don't really know how to get into this without sounding like an asshole. So,
well, I guess we'll just kind of finish up with like how the intro starts and all that. So, the new kids that get introduced. I will say this about some of the new kids. I actually like the spins they put on them because, like, for example, Augustus Gloop is the same as he was in the original. He's just a porker who eats a bunch of chocolate and stuff. He does not care at all about what's going on in that factory because there's just food and candy everywhere.
Yeah. But he's more colorful.
Yeah, he speaks more German and stuff. His mom has, like, a weird big hairdo and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just they're, like, a very cartoonish-looking boy and mother and all that. Violet Beauregard goes through a bit of a change in this movie. Instead of her just being, like, a regular everyday girl whose dad is, like, a car salesman / politician, she is now an uber competitor and is, like, a super athlete and stuff. And her mom is a trophy mom that's, like, feeding off of her success and all that.
Yeah, her mom's been in something that I've seen. I just can't think of it.
Yeah, and I like that kind of twist because you realize these two are a bit insane because they're constantly like, we gotta win this, we gotta win this, we gotta get first place. I'm just like, okay, that's interesting. Veruca's about the same, I'd say. It's just a spoiled girl.
She stays pretty much the same, just in a more modern-ish setting.
I guess.
Mike TV is the most dramatic change of all, I think.
Yeah.
Well, not really super dramatic, but he goes from watching cowboy westerns bang bang to being a freaking
gamer.
He's a gamer. He's playing like a Call of Duty or a Halo type game. I must mention real quick, he's playing a modern shooter in 2005, and the controller he's using is like an Atari joystick controller, and I'm like, all right.
I think for the most part what I like about the change to Mike TV is that this one does not really care at all at what's going on in the factory.
Yeah.
All these kids are getting horrible things that happen to him, and he's just kind of like, I just want to pick a room that has a TV.
So one of the things that they mention is when he finds out, like, which chocolate bar has the golden ticket in it, he's like, yeah, it was a pretty easy system to figure out. You just had to look at, like, the date of manufacturing and everything. And he's like, you have to be a retard to not figure it out. And I was like, all right, thanks, Mike TV.
It's an interesting change to the character because they make him, like, a very smart kid that just does not care about what's going
on. Yeah, he's like one of those kids who are too smart for their own good.
Yeah.
Because he does not understand why he's being an asshole.
This movie is very good at setting up some of the kids to be interesting and all that, but for the most part, what I like about the original kids is that there's at least a charm to them in the way that they all kind of banter around with each other and stuff, because in this one, they don't really interact with each other a ton. They have a few lines where they speak to each other, but
Veruca and Violet are probably the ones who interact the most, because they see each other and like, let's be friends. Best friends.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, they're going to screw each other over at some point. They don't, but it seems like they will.
Yeah, and then Augustus Gloop is like, you want some chocolate, Charlie? He's like, yeah, sure. He's like, well, you should have brought some. Like, in the original, what you see is kind of like when Augustus is in the river just going crazy because he's going to drown. You see Charlie at least reach out with, like, that giant lollipop for him to grab, and then he drowns. Because he at least, I think at least Charlie cared about that kid because he didn't seem, like, super arrogant and all that. He was just eating way too much. And Veruca and Violent do go back and forth in that film, but you like the banter they have because they set this up that these two are going to hate each other.
Yeah.
Mike TV doesn't treat Charlie, like, lower than him. They have some good, I guess, dialogue and stuff and all that, and he's just kind of a dumb kid. In this one, like you said, Violet and Veruca act like best friends, but they know they're going to screw each other over. Augustus just offers chocolate to Charlie, then walks away. Mike doesn't even interact with any of them, I'm pretty sure.
So what I'm going to say is, each of the kids in each of the movies are very of their time.
Yeah.
It feels like. Because kids back in that day were not so, like, apparent. They weren't able to tell when adults were, like, dumb and things. Meanwhile, on this one, they're calling adults out on their bullshit.
Yeah. So, what I like mostly about the intro of this movie is when they enter the factory, it has that big show where all of the puppets are singing and stuff, and they all catch fire. Yeah, and then Willy Wonka's just standing out there like, isn't that magnificent?
Oh, that was a great show!
And then he goes up there and says something really retarded like, good morning, starshine, the earth says hello.
Yeah, like, what the fuck drugs were you on, Johnny Depp?
But the original, it's Gene Wilder. Everybody's crowded around this gate. They're ready to see this guy and see what's going on and what he looks like and stuff. And he comes out walking like he has a limp and all that. Yeah. He's got the cane.
He puts it in like a little hole that he has prepared for it. Steps one step forward, realizes he doesn't have it in his hand anymore, and there's just a somersault. He just does a somersault. And everyone just cheers for him. And that's really smart, because he at least still has kind of like that childish kind of wants to play pranks on you kind of thing. Meanwhile, this one, it just seems like Johnny Depp's trying too hard to be a child.
Yeah, the thing about Johnny Depp in this movie is the fact that it's just his line delivery and the way that he kind of interacts and stuff with the kids is almost like he's a pedophile and just like a serial killer psychopath.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I don't like about this movie is the fact that they just kind of take the character of Willy Wonka and turn him into almost a creep in a way. Because, like, the way he interacts around the parents and stuff is like he can't say the word parents because of his traumatization. Yeah. And then, like,
when makes no sense.
Yeah. And then when, like, the kids are hugging him and stuff, he's like, don't touch me and all that. And he doesn't care when they introduce him at all.
It was like Veruca just walks up and hugs him. She's like, hi, Mr. Wonka, I'm Veruca Salt. And he's like, don't hug me, little girl. And then Mike TV, he just keeps telling him to not mumble.
Yeah.
It's like, you should really stop mumbling. It's kind of rude, and I can't understand what you're saying.
Yeah, Mike's the only one that's got, like, common sense in the movie. He's constantly like, well, why would you build...
Charlie kind of.
Mike's kind of like, well, why would you do this instead of this? Why do the workers sing like this? Why is this not rehearsed? And it definitely sounds rehearsed and all that. And what I like about that is the fact that this Willy Wonka should have been the one to, like, correct him and stuff, but instead, he just comes up with, like, the most basic replies, like, you really shouldn't mumble, okay? That's not cool that you're mumbling. Like, and I'm like, there's nothing witty about him there, because he's not constantly proving the kids wrong. He's just like, oh no, I'm right, you're wrong, you mumble, you'd say this, and I don't believe in you.
Because he's trying too hard to be childish. Meanwhile, the Gene Wilder one says some, like, witty, poetic kind of quip. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but he says something kind of witty off the top of his head, even like in the ears of the adults, and that's really what separates them. Because at least Gene Wilder's, he may still be a little bit childish, but he's got that adult likeness to him.
Yeah. So I guess now to kind of get into the punishments and songs. So the first thing that happens to Augustus Gloop in this movie is that he falls in that giant chocolate river. And when he falls into that giant chocolate river, he's, like, flailing around and stuff, but then this big pipe comes down and sucks him straight up in, just like the original. It's nothing really different there. He gets sucked back up in, and then the song begins.
Yeah.
Now the...
And in this one, Wonka's not a dick to him.
No.
He's not like, oh, no, don't, no. And instead, he's kind of just like, oh, this is interesting. Let's see what happens here. So you want to talk about the Oompa Loompa songs?
Yes. Okay, so the Oompa Loompa songs. Let's talk about these for a little second.
Okay.
Well.
Can I just say, basically the Oompa Loompas are just some guy from the 7-Eleven down the street who they got to go in front of a green screen, downsized him, and then got Johnny Depp to pretend he's, like, interacting with them.
So to talk about the Oompa Loompa songs, I really do like these songs. Now, it's just to the fact that, like, they're catchier. And it's because Danny Elfman worked on the production and stuff. He's very good at knowing, like, how to get repetition music into your head and stuff. And he knows what beats are good and what will stick with you. Because, like, Veruca's Come Up It's song, it sounds like a Beatles song. Because of the way that it's, like, all somber and stuff. And it's kind of like, Veruca Salt, the little grit. And it, like, plays out like a Beatles song with all of the guitars and stuff in the background. Yeah. Then you got, like, the Funkadelic song with Violet. Then you got, like, the repetition all, I would say, almost kind of like Mamba-type music with Augustus. And then Mike TV, it turns into a straight rock song.
Yeah, it's like borderline Zeppelin.
Yeah. And what I like about the songs here is that each one is at least different versus the 1971 one, where it's just the same beat that the Oompa Loompas basically have when they sing. And I will give the remake props for that, because I really do like the songs in the remake better, because there are a lot of them that are still stuck in my head. I got Veruca's obviously still stuck in my head, and Mike TV's, Augustus sometimes gets in my head and all that. So I think that it's awesome that the movie was able to get across these messages.
See, I don't have the same viewpoint on that, because I can't really remember any of the songs.
Oh, really?
I can't really remember any of the songs from the original, but I remember, like, the Oompa Loompa Doompa Tee Doo.
I don't know. To me, it's just Danny Elfman has been such a good music producer and all that, fact where I can appreciate what he does for the music in this movie, because he makes it to the point where it gets stuck in your head. He makes the songs kind of catchy and stuff, and I just think it adds more color almost to the movie and stuff, to a movie that's almost kind of, like, bland the entire way through because of Willy Wonka's dry performance and all that. So I'll give the remake props for the music here. But yeah. I guess Augustus's punishment gets wrapped up by the song and stuff. And then the one Mr. Salt is kind of like, that did seem all rather rehearsed. And that should have been the moment where Willy Wonka corrected him. Or had some sort of, like, quick reason as to why it wasn't.
It kind of was that. Because he says, oh, they're very good at improv.
Yeah.
Because maybe they didn't improvise it. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, what I don't like about that scene is when he says that, he just walks away and goes, oh, poppycock. And then, of course, Mike TV is like, no, improvisation is not the same thing. And, you know, Mr. Wonka's like, you shouldn't mumble. And that's, like, his only comeback for, like, half of the stuff the kids say.
You shouldn't mumble, little boy.
Yeah, and I was like, all right, well, Gene Wilder, if he was in this situation, would have come up with some crazy explanation as to why. Because, like, when Mrs. Gloop in the original is talking about how, like, her son has gone up into the fudge room and stuff, he's at least like, your son is gonna be okay, don't worry, we practiced this 100 times, it's not like it was rehearsed or anything, your son was just being a bit of an idiot, why would you raise your kid to be like this? And I like the fact that Gene Wilder is very good at coming up with an explanation to why these kids act dumb.
Yes, and also the original songs actually sound like they're improvised, because if you're improvising, you're not going to be coming up with some major, like, rock song or some mambo song or something. You're going to be coming up with, like, Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Doo. Like, because that's more off the top of your head, and you're like, okay, I got to think of something quick.
Yeah.
So that's... we forgot to mention the backstory of the Oompa Loompas.
I mean, that's just kind of like, it's like...
They come from Loompa Land.
Yeah. Which I guess is better kind of showing how it happened instead of, like, in the remake or the original where it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, I got these Oompa Loompas from a land and stuff. Because you almost get the feeling of 50-50. Did he kidnap them or did they actually come to work?
Well, see, I kind of like the original better because it gives a little more mystery to them. Like, where did they come from?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this one, it's like, oh, I was walking through the jungle of Loompa Land looking for some good flavors for my chocolate. Mm-hmm. I came across this little village and these Oompa Loompas were there. And he's like... doing some kind of, like, sign language type thing.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to be like, that's how they speak, okay. And then, yeah, he just convinces them to come work for him because they're basically a dying race.
Yeah. So I will say this about this movie. It's quite interesting the way that they handled the boat sequence this time around, because it's treated more or less like a fun theme park ride, whereas in the original, I kind of like it because it's treated like a straight horror film. And Gene Wilder's great performance there is what carries that scene. This one, I was just kind of like, it's a simple boat ride that looks like a roller coaster.
Yeah, because in the original, there's intensity. There's, like, he put himself into it. He's saying the poem creepily. He's yelling they're showing all those creepy images. And then this one, it's like, oh, Wonka, where's this boat going? And then it just goes fucking down the thing. They get to the, It goes around a little bit because they're, like, banging on the drums and they're doing some, like, Mongolian throat singing. Mm-hmm. And then they start going past all of the rooms, like the whipping room where they're whipping the cow to get whipped cream. The hair cream room and stuff like that. And then they get to the invention room, and he's like, ah, this is what I wanted to show you.
What I find most interesting about this boat ride is the fact that it felt like Tim Burton just wanted to turn it into almost a ride and stuff. And I think this is actually a ride somewhere.
Probably. It's kind of like a log flume, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a log ride almost and stuff, where you're going down this river and you're trying not to get chocolate on you and stuff. Well, the chocolate never hits them, of course, but like it's treated like a big river ride, basically, and I guess that's kind of the spin. When they get to the inventing room, I was a little underwhelmed, I'm not going to lie, because in the original, at least they're going through and showing off all the crazy gadgets. Like, he's using boots to, like, cook a stew and all that, and he's got the gobstopper machine, and Mike TV presses that thing that shoots out a gun and stuff, and it's just... Yeah. Interesting.
Oh yeah, like he bites into it and like the gum like explodes in his mouth. Yeah, that's funny.
And then
like the machines are making like weird noises, like bam, 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 bam. Yeah. And she's like woof woof. What?
And then in this one, all that happens is he's like, oh yeah, here are the everlasting gobstoppers. Instead of the weird shape, they're just a gumball basically.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and here's hair toffee. And then cousin It comes over and says something, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, that's what it made me think of. And so. Then he comes over and is just kind of like, oh yeah, here's the gum machine for Violet. And so, I'll say this about Violet's punishment versus the original. They at least make it look like a straight horror film is happening in front of you. Because, like, the original treats it like it's not that big of a deal. It's like, oh no, she's a blueberry. And this one, you see her literally grow like 10 foot. And it looks like she could pop at any point, and there's a sense of urgency. The movie's very good at getting across the point that, like, there is a sense of urgency with her punishment. Even though they sing a song and roll her around half the time, and then they're like, oh, yeah, we gotta get that juice out of her immediately. So, I'll give props to the punishment here for Violet, because I feel like it has a little more stakes to it versus the original. I guess, do you agree on that?
To a degree, yes. Violet definitely being that much bigger definitely makes it more of... like intense, but the parent reaction is worse in this movie.
Yeah, I would say this is kind of the one where I'm just kind of like, eh.
Yeah, her dad in the original, he's like, Violet, you're turning violet,
and he's freaking out like she's like, gonna die
because he's like the politician, so he can't have a blueberry for a daughter. And then in this one, she's like, Violet, you're turning violet. And then we'll talk about when they're walking out of the factory after this. So we kind of that. The music for that one I also thought was kind of iffy. Then they go on to the nutcracking room.
Yeah.
Which is where Veruca Salt gets her.
Yeah, and instead of geese, it is squirrels.
Yes, because it's the nutcracking room and not the golden egg room.
There's a great joke that I will give the movie props for before they go in, where Mr. Wonka has a flashback, and then he's like, I'm sorry, I'm having a flashback, and Mr. Salt is like, I see, and he moves Veruca back, and Mr. TV is like, these flashbacks happen often, he's like, increasingly... today. And I'm just like, oh, that's a great joke. And then like Mr. Salt hands him the nut card, like, oh, I'm in the nut business, and he throws it over his shoulder. Yeah, like that's another great joke.
He hands him the card, he turns away, Wonka throws it, like Mr. TV sees it and he's like and then he turns back to him and he's like, oh yeah. They walk into the nut room. He's talking about how these squirrels crack so many nuts, and then Veruca's like, Daddy, I want one. And he's like, oh, well, honey, you've already got so many exotic animals. She's like, she names out all these animals. She's like, I got two ponies, so many monkeys, and all these things. And, he's like, okay, I'll get you one, sweetie. And she's like, no, I want one of those squirrels. And he's like, okay, Wonka, what's your price? And he's like, oh, they're not for sale.
She can't have one.
Yeah. And they don't have the musical sequence in this one, which kind of ruins it.
I don't know. I feel like with this Veruca, I appreciate the fact that she doesn't get a musical sequence, because, like, she is snotty the entire way through, and no musical sequence is going to make me like her anymore or appreciate her singing voice, because I'm pretty sure she couldn't sing, if we're being honest.
Well, yeah, probably not. Because, if we're being honest, it's kind of hit or miss whether or not you get a...
And it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense if she broke out into song, because this movie isn't portrayed as, like, a big musical or anything like the original, so I'm just kind of like, I don't know, it probably wouldn't work here.
She does kind of look like the Veruca from the original movie, though.
She does, a little bit.
It is strange how much she kind of looks like her. It's kind of scary.
Yeah. But
yeah.
Her comeuppance is a little more interesting, because, again, it's treated like a horror movie where all these squirrels are, like, basically almost eating her in a way.
That's Tim Burton.
Yeah, and, of course, Mr. Wonka, instead of, like, in the original, he just stands there. He doesn't care what's going on at all.
No.
In this one, Willy Wonka is, like, just, he's like, oh, wrong key, I can't figure it out. And he's toying with him, and Mr. Salt can easily go over and get her and stuff, but he just kind of stands there because, honestly, you just kind of see that the man has never really had control of his own daughter.
Yeah.
Because he feels like if he goes down there, he's going to get yelled at. that, and he doesn't want to upset his daughter and stuff. And so you see that moment where he's just kind of like, oh, Veruca, you need to get off those squirrels and stuff. And then they tap on her head. They say she's a bad nut. She gets thrown down the chute. And then the musical sequence starts.
Yeah.
And I like this musical sequence because, like I said, it feels like a Beatles song almost, the way that it's portrayed with, like, the little hummy rhythm and stuff.
I'll have to re-listen to it because I don't remember getting quite that idea, but maybe I just didn't listen close enough. Maybe I'll have to re-listen. But I do remember it happens while Mr. Salt's climbing down the stairs.
And they're throwing, like, the portrait of his wife down there, the fish and all that.
And the squirrel comes up from behind and kicks him in the butt, and he just goes, whoa!
And Willy Wonka, his eyes get bigger as he's reaching, like, towards the garbage chute and stuff. Yeah. I like that, because in the original, he's joking around with him, like, oh, yeah, your daughter could be in the furnace. He's like, oh, the furnace, you're so funny. And then he, like, has that realization he's not kidding. He's like, oh, Veruca, don't worry, I'm coming. Whereas this one is just, like, a snob that's like, oh, I don't really want to reach for my daughter in the trash. And so the squirrel, of course, hits him in there, and I'm just like, oh, that's great. It's all handled well, because Wonka was waiting for that moment for him to get his comeuppance. Because, like, the first scene where they're in the big, what is it, the chocolate room?
Oh,
is that
the
what it was called?
Pure imagination.
Yeah,
or
and they're all going off to eat the candy and stuff. Salt looks at him kind of weird, and then Wonka gets those big eyes again, like, you're gonna get something, buddy. And then I think that's all handled really well, and I like the comeuppance that comes because Wonka tries to hold in laughter about him falling down.
Yeah.
And I guess, okay. Now we'll kind of move in towards the
Mike TV.
Well, do you want to go over that weird elevator sequence?
Oh, yeah, because they do the elevator way before the end of the movie.
Yeah. Now, I will admit, it is nice to see, like, what the elevator can do. All the rooms it can go into, like, all these different rooms. Because it adds, like, a bigger emphasis on there's more to this factory than just chocolate and stuff. There's
inventions.
And it
is a glass elevator.
Yeah, and it's a glass elevator. There's a lot in it that is interesting. So, I really enjoyed this sequence. How about you?
It's very well done. That's for sure. Because you get to see all these different rooms that you wouldn't normally see. Like, they're testing these fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, like, the, oh, God. The receptionist's room.
Yeah.
And you see that, what's his name? The Oompa Loompas dressed like women.
Yeah.
Hi, Doris. and then
he gets a flashback, of course, there. And we've already talked about what we think about the flashbacks. But then we move into the new room. Which I will admit, this room, I would say, is it's bigger. It's more high-tech and stuff.
The
so I like the idea of this room a little bit better. I'll give the remake props here because I like the way that it's treated. It's like this big room where if you take off these glasses, you'll die, basically. Or your eyes will short-circuit.
Well, they kind of do that in the original. Because they have to wear these suits and they have to wear these glasses. So, in this one, the television room, it's a lot more, it's a lot more technologically advanced.
Mm-hmm.
They still do the big Wonka bar, and they transport it into the little TV, and this time, they're actually showing things in the TV while it's happening.
Yeah.
And then Mike TV, he decides, oh, I want to be teleported, so he's, like, running, he knocks these Oompa Loompas down, because they're half his size, he runs, presses the button, jumps into the thing, gets teleported into the TV, and then they start the musical sequence, which this time I think actually includes him even more into it.
Yeah.
Because in the ones previous, they didn't really include the child. Except for, I guess, Violet. She gets included because she's being rolled around like a ball.
Yeah.
But Mike TV's actually being, like, tossed around and, like, hit by things and stuff. It's funny.
And I like that because it goes through all the different television channels and the Oompa Loompas are these characters.
Yeah.
And then, like, as he's falling down, it turns into, like, that Beatles reference right there where they're all playing the music.
They're all playing
and stuff.
It, like, the Ed Sullivan show. And then there's the Led Zeppelin kind of, like, rock band thing where he lands on the cymbal and they hit it and he flies off. It's funny.
I like
that. That's probably one of the better songs for it for me, because it's actually a fun, like, sequence and everything.
It's a fun sequence, yeah. So, then after that, he gets pulled out there, like, take him to the taffy puller, and his dad's like, taffy puller? And he's like, hey, that was my idea. And so, of course, they get to the end of the tour, and Willy Wonka's like, well, are there any kids left? And then he's like, Charlie's the only one. He's like, oh, my dear boy, you've won. And he doesn't give him, really a test or anything. He's just, assuming that he's going to take the factory afterward.
Yeah. They get in the elevator, and he's like, he doesn't even let Charlie press the button. He's like, all right,
yeah,
up and out. And You think that they're just gonna crash through and like die, but there's like a metal thing on top of the elevator that
I like this sequence in particular of the way it's handled and stuff. He's like, "Oh man, we're gonna need more speed if we're gonna get out of here." And he's like, "All right, here we go, up and out." And Grandpa Joe's freaking out, like, "Do you really mean?" He's like, "Yeah, I do, but it's made of glass. We'll smash it to a million pieces." And then he does that laugh where he's like,
They do something like that in the original, but not quite to this degree.
Yeah,
because they do it for more comedic value in this one, I think.
Yeah, and then they go through and stuff, and they hover over the kids that are coming out. Now, I will say this about the original. I like the mystery a little bit more behind the fact of what happened to these kids. He's like, "Oh, don't worry, they're all fine, they're returning home, but they might be a little bit wiser," but you don't see them.
Yeah.
And it almost makes you think, is Wonka telling the truth?
Yeah, and then, and this one, you actually see them walking out. You see,
Augustus.
Augustus is just covered in chocolate. He's the only one that got out kind of scot-free without any injury. And then there's
Violet,
who is more flexible than she was before.
Yeah.
It's kind of a scary thing with her because she could be like that little one of those exorcist things.
And then she's like, "Look, Mom, I'm more flexible." And her mom's like, "Yes, but you're blue." And you see that moment where her mom is kind of like just given up on being a trophy mom. She's like,
"I hate my kid.
Yeah, my daughter is a freak now. I can't do anything here. Might as well go home and drink at this point." So,
And then there's Veruca Salt, and they're just covered in trash. And it doesn't even look like they're actually covered, and it looks like they just got like fake plastic stuff and just laid it on their shoulders.
What I find the most interesting about this sequence is as they're walking out, both their faces are just ticked off, but they don't want to say anything. And then Veruca's like, "Daddy, I want a glass elevator." And then finally Mr. Salt learns his lesson to not spoil his daughter. He's like, "Veruca, you're only getting a bath, and that's it." And she's like, "But I want one." And you see, like, he just goes snap again.
She's like, with that mad face. And then Mike TV comes out, and he's, like, 17 feet tall.
Which,
he's, like, thin as cardboard.
I love his dad's reaction with the jacket, because he's like, "I don't know what to do here." And he looks at him because he's huge and all that. And, you know, part of me wonders what they had to say to the press coming out, because they're all around there. I wonder, you know, it's great.
They probably would have just said, "Wonka's a madman. Do not go in there."
Yeah, which makes me think, with like his candy sales plummet because people are like, "Look what he did to these children."
Yeah.
Oh, and the biggest is they didn't sign a contract.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So could they not just easily sue Wonka in this film?
Well, I think that's kind of like a hidden thing. Maybe like once you get the golden ticket, you're automatically contracted or something.
I don't know, but what I like about the original is he makes him sign a waiver. He's like, "Anything bad that happens to your kids, I can't do anything. They're being the ones that caused it."
And now let's go on to the point where Wonka's kind of a dick and breaks
their
roof.
The movie that just carries on is what I'd say.
Yeah.
Like, the movie could have easily just ended.
It's like the song that never ends.
Yeah. So he breaks through the roof, he confronts the Bucket family and stuff, and he's like, "Charlie's won the factory," and everybody's like, "Oh, that's great." And he's like, "Are you ready to come live with me and all that?" And he's like, "Yeah, can my family come?" He's like, "Oh, of course not.
That's actually kind of scary. He's like, "You want to live with me, Charlie?"
And then I like that because then Charlie's like, "Well, no, I'm not going without my family." And then he's like, "Oh, that's weird. There's other candy besides chocolate. No, you need to go." And he goes. And I was like, what's going on here? Is this the test? And then, of course, it shows, like, Charlie got a job and stuff as a shoe shiner. And his family, his dad got a better job so they can get more food besides cabbage soup and all that.
Yeah.
And so then, finally, Mr. Wonka's sitting there. He's like, "Shame what happened to that Willy Wonka guy. His candy isn't selling good." And he's like, "Yeah, he's a jerk. He has a weird haircut." And he's like, "I do not have a weird haircut." And he's like, "Why are you here?" He's like, "I'm not so sure. I don't feel the hottest." And he's like, "What, do you want to go visit your dad?" And he's like, "Hey, that's a good idea. We should go visit my dad.
He doesn't want to at first, but then Charlie says he'll go with him. And he's like, "Oh, okay." But what I think is funny is the therapist.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's sitting there talking to him. He's like, "Man, I don't feel the greatest." And he's like, "Well, I don't know what I'm doing." And he's like, "Oh, the reason I was making good chocolate is because I felt great, and now I don't feel great, so I'm making bad chocolate." And then he goes and meets Charlie at the shoeshine place, and then they go and meet Willy Wonka's father, which is that time's current day Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
Poor guy. Basically, he's like, "Oh, did you make
an appointment?
He's like, "Oh, he's overdue." And then Willy Wonka's laying down. He's checking out his teeth. He says something, and then he's like, "Never flossed after all these sun."
It's handled so weirdly, but it kind of shows where he got his weird mannerisms from with his dad. And it's weird, but kind of sweet at the same. I don't know. It's so weird, but like
so. I will say one thing. It is kind of sweet that his dad did keep all, like, up to date on his own son. Because he had, like, the walls covered in, like, "Wonka does this, Wonka does that. Something happened with Wonka. Spies at Wonka," and everything. And then they hug, and I guess they're all good now, but I don't think Wonka really meets with his father anymore.
Yeah.
And then Charlie decides to work with him.
Yeah, because the family can come move in now. And then...
No, it's all like... Oh, yeah, they did move in.
And then it ends with that nice dinner scene where Willie stays with him, and he feels like he's included in the family and all that. And so the movie ends on like a storybook ending, because you see that it was the Oompa Loompa narrating the whole time, which you said you didn't really... Did you not really like that?
I just didn't expect it, because it's actually Christopher Lee, right?
Yeah, his voice.
And then he's just... So I didn't expect it, because, I mean... I thought they would have done something smart, like maybe have Wonka's dad narrate. Mm-hmm. But hey, it's comedic value. It's Tim Burton. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I thought this was an okay movie.
It's okay, yeah, for the most part. So I guess to kind of get into my synopsis and then my grades for both of them. So I will say this about the original. It's got charm. It's got Gene Wilder.
Yep.
It's got amazing performances from pretty much mostly everyone, I'd say. I like the message behind it. I like the Charlie Bucket in that film a little bit better, because he's not super nice all the time like the one in this movie. You see those moments where he's like, oh, I want this. I kind of want to try this and all that, because he's a kid. He's fleshed out. He's not going to be perfect. But in this one, this kid is like a saint, basically. You could build a church around this kid.
The actor that plays... Charlie in the remake is the guy that plays that like autistic doctor and that the good doctor. That's what the show is. He plays that guy. So I'll say you can't beat the original.
No,
that's a timeless classic. I think if you want to show your kids Willy Wonka or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, go with the original from 1971. Gene Wilder's a great Willy Wonka. Johnny Depp just does not do it for me. He's just too creepy.
Yeah.
So, do you want to go ahead and get into ratings?
Yeah, well, I was doing the synopsis, but it's okay.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. So, my synopsis is, like I said, the charm is great. Gene Wilder's great. I like all of the acting for the most part. The message is nice. I like the musical aspect of it and stuff. I like the fact that the movie just feels like a rewatchable film, because Gene Wilder's performance as the very witty Willy Wonka and stuff is what makes you come back and rewatch it.
Yep.
I like the fact that this movie just has a great simple message behind it about how all good things come to good people and stuff. I just like this movie in general. Like I said, I could have done without the Oompa Loompa songs. There is that one song you were talking about that I kind of liked and all that. Some of the punishments I didn't really like, and maybe it's just because of like the dated aspect of it and stuff. But for the most part, I give Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory like an 8 out of 10. Now, what?
That's exactly what I was going to do.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as for the remake. The remake, it's got some bad in here. More bad than good, I will say. Because, like, Johnny Depp's not a good Willy Wonka. I don't understand why he got picked to be Willy Wonka.
Because he's kind of like a method actor, I guess.
I know, but it's just, he doesn't fit the role that much. I don't like how bland the kids can be at times.
Tim Burton has a thing for him.
Yeah, I don't like how weirdly they just tried to add more backstory to Willy Wonka. I didn't like the fact that the movie kind of had some exposition sequences and stuff as to like, how did this happen, Mr. Wonka? Well, here's the flashback and all that. The things that I
flashback
did like
central.
For, yeah, the things that I did like for the most part was the weird dark humor at times with Willy Wonka and some of the other characters.
Yeah.
I like the musical sequences a lot better with the Oompa Loompa songs. I like the punishments a little bit more. I don't really like the resolution that much because it just feels kind of hand-fisted, like it was dragging on the movie and stuff. I guess I would just say for the most part, I give it like a 5. It's just okay. I guess you?
I was going to say that too.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we pretty much had the same idea on our opinions on the movie. It's just that you and I like different things. You liked the musical sequences in this one and in the remake a little bit better, and I liked the musical sequences in the original, because it's the original's a musical movie, and the remake is not.
No.
So do you just go ahead and end it off here?
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'd end it. Basically, I would recommend if you want to watch either of these two, just go with the original. Like, the remake, if you're looking for just some dumb, dark humor and some weird Willy Wonka acting, go watch it. Because
if you want Tim Burton, it's Tim Burton.
Basically. And I will say this about the movie. I think that it is fine for what it is, but I really don't think the remake was ever necessary.
No. So... pretty much, that's all we have to say about this movie.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to go ahead and jump on into Goodfellas,
then. Yeah, jump into Goodfellas.
I'm going to go ahead and end it here. All right, and now we're going to talk about Goodfellas, a great gangster movie.
Yeah.
You really like it. I'm going to let you go ahead and give the summary.
Yeah.
Or the synopsis.
So this was one of my favorite movies that I really do think is just a mastercraft almost in a lot of ways, because this is a Martin Scorsese film. He's one of my favorite directors just simply because this guy has a great way of executing his movies. If you've seen Raging Bull, if you've seen Casino, if you've seen The Wolf of Wall Street, then you've seen this guy's style and stuff. His editing choices may be weird to some people, but I like it. It's stylistic in the way that he makes his movies and all that. Usually the score in all of his movies is really good too. He gets a lot of grit out of his actors and stuff. I would say that this movie is just all around a fun time. I recommended this movie because I really, really wanted to talk about it because this is just one of my all-time favorite Scorsese films. So I guess to give a quick little plot synopsis of this movie, it's all about a guy named Henry Hill who came from a poor neighborhood and stuff and all that, and he's grown up looking at like what the mob life is like, because the movie is very good at putting an emphasis on like all the gold watches and stuff they wear and how they have power over everybody and stuff. And so he wants that life, and he just does small errands and stuff for him at first, until his dad figures out that he's skipping school, and then the mob's like, oh, you know what, we're gonna take care of this. They take his mailman and threaten him that if he takes another school letter there, he's gonna get whacked. And then you see Henry gets like his first major gig and stuff. He burns all those cars, and then he goes to court, gets out scot-free, and then you see him kind of grown up into this mob lifestyle and stuff, and the way that he's kind of been integral and all that, and everybody likes him and all that. And basically the rest of the movie is kind of about how loyalty is a big thing in the mob, and about how you can't always just be the rat. And the movie puts a big emphasis on you never rat on the mob, because it shows the consequences of that, even though at the end Henry Hill does ultimately rat on them.
Really, to start at the film, they talk about Paulie. Paulie's like the Paulie, what's his name, Sorvino or something?
Yeah, he's a made man in the mob and stuff. And the reason that Henry Hill looks up to this guy is because his dad is not really a father figure to him.
Yeah, he's kind of an asshole.
He really just beats him and stuff. That's pretty much the only way he thinks he can get the message across to his son and all that. So I like when the movie kind of shows the sequences where he's not only with Robert De Niro's character, Jim Lee Conway, but also Paulie, because the two of them act like a father figure that show him into like the mob and stuff. And the one thing that I will say about this movie and how it's very good at bringing Henry Hill into the limelight is the way that it implements the freeze frame sequences. Because the freeze frames throughout the movie all have a purpose. Like, the very first time that it freeze frames on, I believe it's him kind of like coming out of the courtroom and stuff, it kind of has that moment where that's the moment where it puts an emphasis on he's been accepted as a member of the mob. He's finally someone that can actually be accepted as part of, like, this big group and stuff. The freeze frame on his dad shows that at times you have to take a beating, basically, because beatings come with being in the mob and stuff. Then there's the freeze frame on his mailman getting put in the oven, and it shows that, like, to get what you want, you have to use violence. There's a freeze frame on him blowing up all those cars that has a cultural significance of the fact that, like, hey, he likes committing crimes. He finds it fun. This is one of the few things in the mob. Then there's the freeze frame after they kill Billy Batts, and that's the moment where you see the mob does kind of have consequences to the things that you do, because he realizes that they've done a bad thing. Just the freeze frames in this movie are great. I think that the editing all around is what keeps this movie afloat, because, there's a lot of weird quick edits. There's a lot of, like, emphasis on, like, what everybody's doing, and they have that, like, shot of, like, them going through all of the mob bosses and stuff. And, you know, most people will be like, why is this in the movie? Well, it's putting an emphasis on, like, how big the mob is and how everybody likes Henry and all that. And I just think that the movie's very good at bringing Henry into this world.
Yes. I must say, this is a very slow burn movie. I don't think many people will quite get that. But it's a movie that you gotta watch to really understand it. There's a lot of movies like that. I think a lot of Kubrick movies are probably slow burns. Halloween is a slow burn movie. I mean, I would say even Willy Wonka is kind of a slow burn, because it takes a while to get into the meat and potatoes of that movie. It takes about 50 minutes to get to the factory.
For the most part, I would say what I like about this movie is when it finally gets into the mob and all that, it shows Henry's role. He's been rolling with Joe Pesci's character of Tommy DeVito, this very small man in the mob and stuff, but he's very wild-cardish and very violent in the way that he lashes out at how people make fun of his small stature and all that. And then he works with Robert De Niro's character, Jimmy Conway, who's basically a big shot and all that. He's not a made man, but he's like the tier before the made man, basically, and everybody loves him and stuff, and he's kind of like the brains of the operation almost in a lot of ways. And the way that they work together to get the information and stuff and taking out guys is great and all that. And just, I want to talk about these characters, because Henry Hill is probably one of the most interesting characters I've seen in any film ever, because he not only has to balance a family lifestyle, but at the same time, he has to also balance the mafia, and then he's got a girlfriend that he's trying to hide from his wife, but his wife figures it out. Then he's got to smuggle drugs at some point in his life. And this guy goes through so many different things. And you just kind of see the psychological torment it has on the guy to where finally...
He's doing coke.
Yeah, you do understand why he gives it up. Why he rats on the mob and stuff at the ending. Why he basically just gives it up. Because you see, it is tearing this man's psyche apart. All of the stuff that he has to do. Now, Tommy DeVito is a character that I have a lot of love for. Joe Pesci won Best Supporting Actor for this, and I think he deserves it all the way through. Great in his performance as Tommy. Mm-hmm. What I like about this character is the fact that he's the wild card of the entire movie. And it's simply because the mafia is all about you've basically got to prove yourself as stronger than the opponent that you want to get the information from. And, you know, he's very small. He's almost not, like, midget-like, but he's smaller than everybody else.
Yeah, he's about, like, 5'6", probably, or something like that.
He is very, very, very insecure about his size. So he's constantly, like, shooting people and all that, and he's constantly, like, beating people up just because they insult him and stuff, because he feels insecure about his own, like, how he looks and stuff.
Yeah.
And I like that, because there's a great scene in the movie where this kid named Spider that serves drinks to him. He's literally just trying to be a nice kid and stuff, and Joe Pesci is treating him like dirt and stuff and all that, and he accidentally shoots him in the foot, and he goes to the hospital. And then when the kid comes back, you see that moment where Spider is kind of like, hey, you know what, Tommy, I'm sick of you, I hate you, and all that. And then,
fuck you, Tommy.
Yeah, that's, and then, of course, Robert De Niro's like, oh, Tommy, you gonna let him take that from you? What's this world coming to? And then he ends up shooting that spider kid to death.
He's like laughing along with him, and then he just hits a straight face, shoots him like 5 times. Henry runs to the kid's aid, because Henry doesn't like death. He doesn't like watching people die, because there was that first time that the guy gets shot, and he gives the guy, like, 6 towels or whatever to help clean him up, and that was the first time he ever saw someone get shot, and he didn't like that. And then he didn't like watching that Billy Bats get murdered in his club, because he just doesn't like death. And then they had to bury him, and then they had to go dig him up and rebury him, and the two guys are just, like, sitting there laughing, and then Henry just, like, over to the side puking into his shirt,
because
it just makes him so sick. That's kind of a funny scene. He is a Christian man getting married to a Jewish woman in the movie, which, it's strange.
Because the girl is like, my parents cannot know anything about you and stuff. And I like the way that he kind of plays around with that, and then when they do eventually find out, they're like, well, it's too late, my daughter's married this psychopath and all that. And the movie's very good at kind of showing off that. Robert De Niro's character is the one that I think I like the most in this movie, just because the presence of power that he has in every scene makes you feel like you have no clue what he's going to do next, because there's this whole heist that gets set up.
Yes.
And De Niro knows that this one guy who's got, like, the fake wigs and stuff is constantly like, hey, man, I want my share of the money. This was brilliant idea. Yeah, Morty. And Morty's kind of like, you know what, De Niro, I want? He's like, oh, don't worry. Everybody's going to get their cut. But people are getting executed from that heist. They're ending up in the back of freezer trucks. They're ending up in garbage bags and dumpsters. There is a lot of stuff that happens that you almost want to think, is De Niro the guy that you'd really trust? And De Niro's got all of these ties and stuff to where he thinks he's going to get out safely. He even kills Morty, the guy that pretty much masterminded.
Yeah, Morty's just, he's like, where's my money at? He's not a mobster, gangster kind of guy. He's some dickwad that has a wig business, and he's like, oh, my wig's never come off, you see? And then his wig comes off when he's getting strangled. And then later on in the movie, he just gets stabbed in the back of the neck by, like, an ice pick or an awl or something.
Yeah.
Tommy just is sitting behind him in the car, stabs him in the neck, lets him die. And then as Jimmy figures out that people are being idiots and using their money that they're not supposed to spend yet, he's having each of them killed off, like that one guy who bought that nice car for his wife. They both get killed in their... They both get, like, beat to shit. And then they just get left in their car to die, and then some kids see them. And then there's that one guy with kind of, like, that fro-ish haircut.
Yeah.
Who he's just hanging in the freezer. It took him, like, 2 days to thaw him out or something.
Now, I do want to talk about the consequence that they have, because while they are super powerful guys, and you do like really want to be these characters because of how powerful they are and the way that they have mob ties and stuff, there is a consequence that occurs in the movie. Now, as we said, Joe Pesci's character Tommy is a wild card. He's a guy that acts out in violence sometimes for no good reason, and the only reason that he does it is because of, again, his small stature. Now,
yes.
This guy named Billy Batts, who is a made man in the mob, he's at this bar, his bar and all that, and he's like, oh, I remember you. You were the boy that used to shine my shoes and stuff. You had shine boxes.
He's basically, Tommy's trying to avoid him at all costs. He's trying to get him to come over and give him a hug. He's like, hey, come over and give me a hug, Tommy. And Tommy's like, and then he just ignores him, and then he blows off on him while he's in the club.
Yeah.
And then Jimmy and Henry get him to leave, and then he comes back with a pistol, walks up behind Billy, starts talking to him, and then just pulls the pistol and starts whipping him with it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk about my favorite scene of the movie?
Yeah, is this including that?
Not really.
Well, we'll get to that after this, because I want to go through this sequence. So, what I like about this sequence is, after that moment where he's like, no, go and get your shine box, and he explodes, and then finally, De Niro and Pesci are like, you know, we'll just kill this guy, and you know, they're never going to figure it out, because we'll go bury the body, and so, they kill him. Of course, that's where it cuts back to where the movie begins, with them all driving and stuff, but they stop at first at Joe Pesci's mom's house to get some dinner, because it's important, you know, in the mob and stuff, they love to eat and all that, and Italian cuisine plays
a big part. And he loves his
mom. Yeah, and he loves his mom, and you put a big emphasis on the fact that while they are horrible people, this guy does care for his mother and all that. He's like, oh, my, and his mom cracks jokes at him that, you know, if you said to any other mobster, you probably get shot and stuff, but he loves his mom so much that he cares for her. And then they're driving down the road with Billy Batts. He's kicking in the back. They shoot him. They stab him. They bury him. And, you know, you're supposedly going to think, oh, no, things will be fine for these characters. But the mafia always figures it out, because Polly confronts Ray Liotta, and it's like, hey, if you know anything about Tommy, or you know anything about who killed Billy Batts, you let me know, right? He's like, yeah, of course. And so you think, oh, they're going to get away with it because the body's been reburied somewhere. They're never going to find it, figure out who it is. But they do. But before we get into that beautifully executed sequence, unless that, is that the sequence you're talking about?
I wanted to talk about the scene where Ray Liotta beats the guy with a pistol for, like, trying to basically have sex with his wife, because she's like crying in the phone, but she's like, oh, it's horrible, he did these things, he tried to touch me, and then I guess he pushed her out of the car or something.
Yeah.
And then he just he tells his wife to go inside. He grabs his pistol up from underneath the seat, puts it in his waistband of his pants or something, walks up to the guy, grabs the pistol out and starts beating him with it, tells him to never fuck with his wife again. And the other guys are just sitting there watching, because they don't know what's going on. They're just innocent guys. So they're just like, what the fuck is happening? And then he stands up, points the gun at the two guys, walks back, hands the gun to his wife, and she's like, you know, other women would have ran away when he did that. And then she's like, oh, that just turned me on. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, the thing that I like about, well, I guess before we get into my favorite sequence in the entire movie, the one thing that I do like about Ray Liotta that you pointed out is that he does love his wife, and he does have a girlfriend on the side and all that, but like, when those two sides collide, it does kind of show the fact that this man has no idea what he's doing,
because
he can't balance both.
He's like, he's in prison for like 10 years or something?
Yeah.
Or maybe this is the second time, I can't remember. No, it's the first time. So he's in prison for 10 years, and they get this like special suite and everything, because they have connections. And then his wife comes in, she's smuggling stuff in for him, and she realizes that her name was on the thing to visit him, and she just starts yelling at him and throwing all the stuff at him. It's kind of funny, but at the same time, you're annoyed for him.
Mm-hmm. What I like about it is when you finally see him kind of tell the girlfriend, hey, we can't keep doing this, okay, Karen's going to figure it out and all that, and she goes crazy, but she ends up becoming the cocaine dealer.
No, that's a different person.
Oh, a different person?
Yeah. Okay. I think her name's like Sandy or something, the cocaine one.
And what I like about that is the fact that the movie is very good at showing off Ray Liotta can't balance two lives. He can't balance this mob lifestyle, and he can't balance the family aspect and stuff. But now I want to get into the consequence, because, like I said, they thought they were never going to figure out what happened to Billy Batts. They thought they were going to get off scot-free. And here's my favorite scene in the entire movie. Now, Joe Pesci is going to get named. And, of course, this is coming after, like, the big heist that happened and all
He's
that.
He's becoming a made man.
Yeah, De Niro and Ray Liotta think, oh, life is going to be great for us because we got all this money and stuff now, and Pesci's getting made, which means we have some sort of protection.
We're basically made men because he's a made man. And they can't become made men because they have, like, Irish in them.
Yeah, they have Irish in them, so they're not full-blown Italian and all that. And what I like about it is Pesci is all dressed up. He tells his mom, I made it. Look at me. I'm all dressed up. She's like, oh, I'm so proud of you. Make sure you're safe and all that.
Yeah.
Pesci gets gets in the car, and then they have that scene where it's like, you know, you'd look at us and you go, hey, that's a good fella. And that's, you know, where the intro and, like, the title and all that comes in, is that the reason that they're good fellas is because you look at these guys and you think, yeah, they're good fellas, but yes, they're doing work that's dirty and all that. And what I like about it is Joe Pesci gets in the car, they go to that place, he enters the door, sees nobody there, and he realizes and gets shot in the head.
They shoot him in the back of the head, and it exits at the front. Yeah. That way they can't have an open casket.
Yeah, and it's a sad scene because you think about the mom and what's happened to her and all that, yeah, and the fact that she kind of is just like, I have no clue what I'm doing here. I basically have lost my son. I don't know why the mob would do this and stuff. And I think that there's, like, a great emphasis on the fact that, like, the mob now knows. And so this is what I would say begins as the Jimmy Conway downfall, because he begins to not trust anybody after this.
Yeah, he's looking over his shoulder. He's basically tweaking out, and he's not even doing the drugs.
Yeah.
He tries to get Henry's wife killed, I think.
Yeah, but it doesn't work out for her and stuff. And basically, the final straw for Henry is when Jimmy is going to send him to Florida for a mission, but it's going to be him and some other guy. And Jimmy knows if he goes to Florida, whacked.
Yeah.
Because at this point, De Niro doesn't trust anybody. He's just like, you know what? If I can't be trusted, I can't trust anybody. So this is what I really like about the movie, because in this entire sequence, I would say this is where the editing gets the most interesting, because it's fast-paced, because this is where Henry Hill has to now start moving the cocaine and all that.
Yeah.
And you see him kind of driving around looking for that helicopter that's finding him and stuff. He's got to run all of these different places, and, like, the music is like a beat bongo drum that's getting quicker and stuff, because that's, like, his heart rate that's racing. And then the babysitter's like, I need my hat. And he's like, you need your hat to get on the airplane with all this cocaine?
Yeah, that's kind of a dumb part right there, because, like, you need your hat!
And so, finally, they get in the car, they pull out, and then it's the setup where the cops finally got him, yeah, and stuff, and the bongos die down, which means his heartbeat has died down. And then finally he gets taken to prison, they find all the cocaine and stuff, and then Henry's like, look, if I rat on all these people, you gotta promise me that nothing bad happens to the kids. And the wife's like, I can't be with you, do you know what you've dragged me through and all that?
No, she doesn't want to go into the witness, yeah, protection program, because she won't be able to see her mom or her dad or anything anymore.
Yeah, and what I think is great about all that is the fact that Ray Liotta knows that if he does this, he's screwed. So, of course, he rats Jimmy and Polly go to, like, court and all that and,
yep,
stuff, and then you got that fourth wall break where, of course, Ray Liotta's addressing the audience, because now he's one of us. He's just a common,
yep,
person. He's no longer a good fellow.
Common man.
Yeah, and so I like that he's like, yeah, sure, I did drugs, I did all of this bad stuff, they killed people, but you know what, at the end of the day, I don't regret doing any of it,
yep,
because it was fun while it lasted. And then the movie, of course, ends with, like, Polly and them going to prison, and then it ends with Ray Liotta in the witness protection and all that. And then it ends on that nice homage where it shows Joe Pesci shooting the gun at the camera, and then he smiles and walks back in the house. Because a lot of people have been confused by this. They don't understand why it's at the ending. But there is a very, very old movie from 1903 called The Great Train Robbery.
Okay.
And it's about a bunch of criminals and stuff that rob a train and all that. And at the ending, the guy shoots a gun into the camera.
Yes.
And basically what I like about that homage is the fact that, like, this character, not necessarily Tommy DeVito or Joe Pesci's character, is ever going to commit crime again. All that's going to happen, basically, is the fact that there are going to be characters out there that still commit crime. The mob, yep, is never going to go away, but Henry Hill can't go to that life. Even though he wants to, he's kind of still trapped in that witness protection life. And what I like about that is it's an homage to the fact that Henry wants to go back to the lifestyle, but he knows that he can't. And then the movie just kind of ends, and I think it's beautiful because, of course, Scorsese ends it on, like, that nice little piano song that's going in the movie, like, after Joe Pesci gets executed,
yeah,
it's brought back at the end. I just find this movie to be a masterpiece, almost. This is great.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. I like this movie. I went in expecting to... Actually, I wasn't expecting to be bored, because the way you had told me about it is you thought maybe I wouldn't like it because it was kind of a slow burn movie.
Yeah, it's not. I will say this. It's not an action-packed movie.
Yeah.
A lot of people perceive
it. There is action, but it's a 2-hour, 25-minute movie. It's not going to be action-packed, mm-hmm, all the way through.
I don't think... See, this is what I like about Scorsese is most modern-day mobster films think that you need big shoot-shoot action. You need to be killing all of these guys and stuff. What I don't like about that is that's not the point. What,
yeah,
makes Goodfellas such a good movie is the fact that it's about the characters and the power that they have. Like,
yeah,
sure, people are going to get shot. They execute people. People get killed and all that. But what makes this movie so freaking good is the fact that it knows its source material. It knows that it doesn't have to go over the top. All it has to do is show these characters interacting with each other. Yep. And that's probably the biggest pull in the movie, is that the character writing is what keeps you in here. Great character writing equals a great mobster film. Action does not always equal a great mobster film.
Yeah.
As long as your characters are interesting and they have a sense of power on the screen, your movie will be fine. I love Goodfellas to death. I don't really find anything wrong with it. Maybe some people could say the editing's bad. I could argue, you know, it's not. It's stylistic. Some people could say that it drags on in some scenes. I mean, I get what you're saying there, but to me, I think it's all just really well done.
Yeah.
This is one of the few movies I have ever given a 10 out of 10. And it's just simply due to the fact that I really enjoy Scorsese as a director, and I love mobster films. I saw The Kitchen not too recently, and I really did not like it because it doesn't understand what it's like for all of these mobster films and stuff and what makes them so great, because that movie puts an emphasis on, like, oh, they just steal cash and shoot people and all that. But no, that's not what it's about. It's about the power that these characters have. It's about the way that they interact and intimidate their opponents without using guns and stuff. I just love this movie for the sole fact that it's a good mobster film. It's probably the best mobster film out there. I think I would keep it at a 10. I may move it to a 9 because there's probably going to be some cynical guy out there that's going to tell me I'm wrong and all that. But I think I'm going to keep it at a 10. This is one of the few masterpieces out there that I enjoy. I guess your take?
So, I didn't quite think it was a masterpiece. I don't think I've ever found anything that I did consider a masterpiece quite yet. Yeah, I've given a couple movies 9s out of 10s. And, of course, one of my favorite films of all time is only a 7 out of 10. But, see, I don't quite get the same feeling out of this movie that you get.
Oh, really?
And I understand that, because you kind of watch this movie...
more than you have, probably.
Yeah, more than I have, and you kind of watched it when you were younger, so you probably didn't have as much going for you, so you probably have more of a connection to this movie, I assume.
Yeah.
See... I didn't watch this movie quite at all when I was younger, because I guess I never had any interest. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, okay.
So, my rating for this movie is probably going to be an 8 out of 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think that is... that's still a really good score.
Yeah.
It's not quite 9 out of 10, which I think I gave to, like, Forrest Gump and Into the Spider-Verse, which are two really lovely movies that I love. But Goodfellas, I enjoyed it. There were some things that I didn't like about it, but...
Did you want to address any of those things that you didn't like?
I think we kind of addressed them throughout this, probably.
Well, I think we talked more positive than negative, which is why I just wanted to see if you could reiterate.
See, one of the things I didn't like was actually... I thought Tommy was a little bit too aggressive.
Oh, really?
I understand what they're going for, because, yeah, he's a small guy, he has a short temper, but maybe they could have... I don't want to say tone it down a little bit, because that's just going to sound like I wanted them to make him all nice and peachy. But, like, the aggressiveness was maybe too much.
Oh, you think?
Maybe I'm just seeing it through a different lens than what you are.
Oh. See, because what I like about Tommy is, in the mob, you always have the one wild card that thinks he needs to prove himself better than everybody.
Yeah.
So what I like about Tommy DeVito as a character is the fact that, sure, he's got the short stature and he's constantly trying to prove himself, but the reason I like this character so much is the fact that, like, while he is a psychopath almost in a way, because the way he just shoots people for no reason, and he's killing people just simply because they make fun of him, what I like about this character so much, I guess, versus you, is the fact that he's not entirely just a horrible person across the board. I get it. He does terrible things, but he does care about his mom and stuff. You do see that there's a sentimental side to the guy because he, like, dates women and stuff and still cares for him and all that. I really like this character. I just think that this is one of the best ways that you can execute a wild card in the mob. But I guess continue on with anything else that you didn't like.
I guess the one thing with him just, like, outright attacking that guy for saying, hey, your bill is, or your tab is a little high, so can you start paying on it? He just, like, oh, you're going to come over here and embarrass me in front of my friends? And he just hits him in the head and boots him out, and he's like...
Well, yeah, one of the biggest things about the mob is you never talk like they've done something wrong. If you act like they've done something wrong, they'll let you know that, no, you're the wrong wise guy that came over and tried to do something bad. That's what I like about this movie, because it takes the mob and it shows the fact that the mob does not take anything from anybody. So if, like, there's that scene in the movie where it's like, hey, this one guy wants to come over and talk to you, Tommy. He's like, oh, he wants me to go over and talk to him, does he? Well, why doesn't he come over here, huh? Does he think I'm some sort of wise guy? And he gets up and he's, like, shoving the guy down and stuff, and then the guy just walks out. I think that's great. Like, it just shows the fact that the mob is not to be messed with. It shows that the mob is a very serious organization that you should not mess with. But I guess you done with your complaints, or do you have anything else?
Those were basically the few things that I had to say about that. I guess I'm going to stick on the 8 out of 10 for my rating.
Okay.
So I guess that's pretty much it for that movie.
Yeah.
So those are the three movies we wanted to talk about. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and Goodfellas. So thanks for giving this podcast a listen. If you ever, if you're a local person or a friend and you want to talk about any three movies, just hit me up on Snapchat, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. If I ever advertise there, I probably won't. Just go ahead and do it. If you have any good movies, let me know.